to the John Covey Podcast, the place to thrive and not just survive. Are you looking for business ideas, sales and marketing advice, or some motivation and courage to chase the life you desire? John Covey is a multi-award winning success coach, helping you close the gap between where you are and where you want to be in the easiest and most enjoyable way. Interested in learning more about working with John? Head over to johncovey.com, where you will find a selection of free tools, content, and information. Okay, let's dive into this episode. Here's your host, John Covey.
Right, hey guys, welcome to the John Covey Podcast. This is episode 95. Today we have the sales guru, the master. Your profile says that you're the most impactful sales and communication expert in the world. You're backed up by Bob Proctor. You're backed up by Peter Sage. Steve Q, welcome to the podcast.
Hey JC, how's it going, man?
Awesome, my friend. Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Good. Looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. Let's tear down the sales processes and
You know what I've done? I put a baseball cap on because we both got no hair. we both got black tops on, so I thought if people know that I'm the one with the cap on, there you go.
It's easy to identify as. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I think there's a slight age difference as well, Steve, but we'll not go down that path.
How much older than me are you, John?
Well, I'm 40, so I'll let you do the math.
Yeah. Well, I was 33 in March, so there you go.
Yeah, man, you're looking good on it.
In my dreams, anyway.
Wicked. Steve, for everybody that's not familiar with yourself, if they've not had the luxury of hearing who you are, like, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Where do I start? So, this sort of whole sales thing, My mum was a GPO trained telephonist. So, give you an idea when this would have been. She was born in 1935. Yeah, same year as Elvis. Oh, and so she started work at the post office at 16, and you weren't allowed to have a regional accent. You had to get trained in quote-unquote the Queen's English. Mm-hmm. And you've seen the films where they connect people by pegging them in and out. So my mum was very, very conscious about the telephone, and she was like, you know, would sort of, when I started wanting to answer the phone when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, very sort of, I suppose we'd say now, coached me on telephone manner and how, you know, how to go on. And then when I was somebody asked me actually this question, or a variant of this question, that when was your first telesales or selling job? And I said at the time, I think it was when I was about 18 or 19, but it wasn't. It was actually, when I think back, I was 14. And did you have a Saturday job at all?
I applied for a Saturday job, but I never got it.
Oh, right. What was it? What did you apply to do?
Working in a shop in the markets in Sheffield City Centre.
Yeah, well,
I think I applied for it and I was too young at the time. I just wanted to go and earn some cash.
Yeah.
I think I might have been about 13. And I think at the time you had to be 16, I think. But
times have changed, because from being about 12 or 13, I worked the markets. I worked the fish market in Mexborough.
Nice.
Yeah. And the people that I worked for, their son, who would be, you know, he had his own family, he'd be in his 30s or whatever. He was at their house one day after the markets when we got back, and I was having a cup of tea with the lady I worked for and waiting for her to pay me. And he said, oh, you speak quite well. He said, do you fancy doing some telesales work? And I said, what's that? And he was an insurance broker. So he said, well, come to I'll pick you up Tuesday evening and come to our office. I'll sit you down. And literally, he sat me down and said, there's a phone book. There's a script. Ring these people up. It's just out the phone book, cold calling, and say, ask them when their motor insurance, general insurance, you know, contents, buildings insurance is due. Find that out, fill it out on the form and say, would they mind getting a call or a visit from this broker to see if we can give them a better quote, save them some money.
Yeah.
And And I tell you what, you know, hardly anybody said no. Everybody answered the phone. There was none of there was no caller ID, so there was no people sort of looking at the phone going, "Who's that calling, John? Ooh, I don't recognise that number." There was none of that crap. Yeah, so just people picked up the phone. There wasn't this sort of vilification of cold callers, and so I'd say probably 90% of people said, "Yeah, sure, why not? Yeah. get him to come round, you know, or it's due next week. Yeah, get him to come round." So that was my first foray, and I did that for about 6 months.
Sweet.
Yeah. So there you go.
And the most important question there, before you did that, what I was going to ask you is, you said you were waiting for your pay pack, your paycheck, your money. Did you used to get it in the little brown envelope?
No, she just used to give me 10 quid. She just used to give me 10 quid out of the takings that day. And what I'd said, it was a fish market, so it always smelled a bit fishy. Always, and then I used to have a procession of cats follow me home.
Nice. So in terms of the script that you use on the telesales then, Steve, I mean, do you still remember that? Is it that embedded into your heart that you can still remember the most part of the script, or has it gone over the years?
Well, I've not thought about it for a long time, but I'm sure it wouldn't be rocket science to make one up that would work for that, would it? You know, it wouldn't be at all. But, you know, talking about scripts, I mean, you're into, I know you're sort of kind of interviewing me on here, but I know you do a lot of sales and personal development coaching like me. That's why I think we thought we'd resonate very well on here, John. What's your view on scripts per se?
I think it's suicidal not to have one.
Mm-hmm.
I think any company who's selling, well, whatever it is they're doing, they need to have a guideline. They need a script, because otherwise, you know yourself, you'll have seen this many times, is that you listen to someone on a call and they start the call off with, "How's your day? You know, the weather."
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like they don't care about that kind of stuff. Like, just get to the point, build a relationship with them. But don't drift too far away from the purpose of why you're calling them. And I think that without a script, it's hard to measure the effectiveness of the activity that they're putting in.
Yeah, yeah. Have you had that call where they go, "Hello, John, how are you today? You okay? Well, I'm calling about the accident you've had that wasn't your fault." You had that one?
Many times, yeah. Oh, you mean the accident that I had 5 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know I was that accident prone, actually. But so where I'm at on scripts, I agree there should be something, but I'm more into if somebody, so I think that, and I feel about this very strongly, but if you're hiring somebody to do this customer service, telesales, whatever, fronting on the telephone, if they haven't got the common sense and basic skills to be able to introduce themselves, introduce the company, and sort of explain the purpose of the call, and get a bit of coaching on doing things like asking if it's okay to use that person's first name, so addressing them correctly and professionally in the first place. If they can't do that, you shouldn't hire them. I mean, it's all too often in call centers and places, people get hired just because they've got a pulse, you know, or even half a pulse, yeah? But as regards the script per se, I think I usually chop it up into three sections, yeah? Because everything's got like a film or a book, mm-hmm. Everything's got and this is a story, mm-hmm. Everything's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I really believe that if we say, right, during the beginning part of the conversation, John, doesn't matter where you do it, keep it to this sort of time length, but get these points in. During the middle, get these points in, and here's what you actually end with, yeah? Mm. So it's a bit like that game where you say to your mates when you go up to the bar or when you talk to somebody, you've got to get, I don't know, you've got to get the phrase Friday the 13th into when you're asking for a pint. Just got to include these words and phrases in it.
Our word was armadillo.
Armadillo, yeah. But we had some ruder ones than that. But the whole point is you've got to get those words into it, and you've got to do it in context. And then, you know, when you've done something maybe for a few weeks, then it starts to become ingrained in here, and you could do it in your sleep. Where, because I think, I mean, you, I'm sure you agree with me that every sales pitch has got to be a two-way conversation, an exchange of information, and all we want to do is get the person on the other end of the line, or the person we sat opposite, to be able to make an informed decision. Yeah,
100% agree.
And look at it with an open mind. So that's where I'm at on scripts.
Yeah, no, and that makes total sense. And I think that, I mean, I think there's a lot of metrics that we probably have to put in play for this. And I feel that I agree with what you're saying. I'm just under the, I've done a lot with call centers as well, and you're right, you know, they have a pulse, and that is about as far as it goes, unfortunately, for some of them, and they are the wrong. So I think it's more important for people like that to have some kind of script to follow than somebody who's a little bit more savvy and a little bit more able to think on their feet as well.
Yeah, and let me just say this as well, because I don't want to sound harsh when some of the things that I say. I believe if there's a spark there with somebody, I believe in trying to, you know, coach that person, mentor that person, and help. I was doing an interim sales director's job recently, and I said, look, I'm not here to tell you guys how to do your job. Yeah, I was actually, but I said, I'm not here to tell you how. What I'm here to do is to get the best version of you, to draw that out of you. Yeah, because you've all been so encouragement. I said, you've all been picked for this job because you're really, really talented people. Yeah, I didn't hire them, so I don't know whether that was exactly the case. But the thing is that I think praise, recognition and encouragement are to sales, well, to anybody actually, they're what rain, sunshine and horseshit are to roses. Yeah, they make people grow, and that's their whole job, is to make people grow, you know. So that's where I'm on that one. So if people can be developed, if people can be coached, and they've got the desire and the willingness, yeah, because you can have the most talented person in the world who's just not interested. In fact, I was running a call centre in Sheffield, about 50 people, and we used to do let's call it a G-up, a rah-rah meeting every morning. And you could divide this into three, like you could with the script. You got the people who were really paying attention. You got the people who were semi-paying attention, and they were your average performers, yeah? People who are really paying attention, getting involved and interacting, and then eventually standing up there at the flip chart themselves. They were the highest performers. Mm. And then you got the people who used the morning meeting as an extension. It was like, you know, I've got up out of bed, but I'm going to continue my lying here. You see him going to sleep. And there was one guy there, he's called Mike, and a Scottish guy. And this guy was so bright, so intelligent, yeah. It was clear he didn't want to be there. He was only there for the basic because for some reason he didn't have anything else. And I think that reason, when I look back, was probably his attitude, because he was a cocky twat, you know, and he'd sit there. And so when you're talking, he had this look on his face, the folded arms, look on the face saying, I've heard all this shit before. I don't believe it. I know you're just doing it to jack us up so that we can make you more money. Yeah, and that's partially true. That's what you're there for. You're all there to make money. Mm. But with, you know, I had an epiphany when I was about 18, when I went to work for an insurance company. And this epiphany was a thing called commission. Yeah, that you could get a bigger amount of money every month, every week, if you did a little bit more production. Yeah. So, you know, we're there to help them to get more for them, which in turn gets more for us, which correlates right back to that Zig Ziglar phrase. If you help enough people get what they want out of life, you can have everything you want out of life. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I know you quote that on a lot.
Yeah. And it's so valid. It's so true. It's like, it's trying to get that to be drilled into people to understand it. And it's like the same saying that Jim Rowan says, you know, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. Like, if you can become more valuable to the marketplace, then you'll get more from the marketplace.
Yes, it's just.
Here's a question for you then, Steve. This is something that I got asked. Do you think salespeople are born or are they trained?
Well, if I wanted to be really, really, really a smart ass, I'd say everybody's born, else we wouldn't be here. You were born, I was born, your wife was born, my wife was born. But I know what you mean. Born salespeople, listen, some people. So we are, I learned this from Proctor and been studying this for 20 years since I met him. We are made up of with two things, our genetic conditioning and our environmental conditioning, yeah? We can go into those in more detail later if you like. But so some people, they're going to be born with a certain sort of predisposition or propensity toward, you know, some people are good at one thing, some people are naturally good at music, some people are naturally good at being funny, you know, like we were just talking about Joe Rogan, all these things. So yes, but not born, because selling is something that is taught to people, and all those, you know, all those silly phrases like, oh, you could sell sand to the Arabs, you John, it's bullshit, you know, no one's going to sell any sand to an Arab who's based in Arabia, because they've got plenty of it. So that's a big misnomer. I just think there's people who are more naturally inclined, but if people want to do it, then people can learn it. You know, you can read a book.
That's the same answer that I gave.
But aren't you amazed that when you go into, I've been into, over the years that I've been doing outsourced and freelance training for companies, I've been amazed that they don't encourage them to, all this stuff that's out there on YouTube now, free. Brian Tracy, Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar, this. They're not encouraged, they don't know who these people are. They've never been given a, you know, I think that if you start in a sales job, no, I'll give you a present. It's going to be a great book on selling by Tommy Hopkins or by Zig Ziglar or something. They're not aware of this sort of stuff, you know. I went to a company a few years ago who was selling a software proposition by the phone. And they just established a sales team because some dynamics within the industry had changed, where they'd had like a monopoly and now all of a sudden they were going to have competition because of something that had happened within the government, and they needed to sort of brush up. They didn't have a sales team previously. So I said, how are you doing? He said, oh, not very well. It's a bit difficult, isn't it? I said, well, where did you recruit your salespeople from? So, he says, well, we took two out of accounts, we took one out of marketing, we took a couple from the junior management team. So they've taken all these people internally rather than recruit people who are experienced, and they've put them there and they've given them a script that somebody with no sales management experience has typed out for them, because they think this is what will resonate. And they've said, right, get on the phone. And they wondered why people were scared and reluctant and not very confident to get on the phone and give it their all, you know? Yeah. So that was quite interesting. And I asked those questions. Have you sent them on a sales training course? Did you buy them a book on sales? Have you directed them? Are you having any training? No. Well, there's your answer, you know? So let's see. And we did manage to turn that one around over a period of time and get them, you know, get it working quite nicely and get them hitting the company's targets. But it's just amazing to me that it's like saying to somebody, John, I want you to be a brain surgeon.
He's okay, a scalpel. So
where's the medical school? Yeah, where's the degree? Where's the doctoring? Where's the junior? No, we'll just give you the scalpel. Crack on.
Away you go.
Yeah.
And it is a funny, it's funny, isn't it? It's a funny situation that that people think everything's a transferable skill. Just because they're good at one thing doesn't necessarily transfer into sales, as we know that, like, and you'll see this a lot in the difference between the transition between direct sellers and telesellers. People that's doing telesales and people that's doing direct sales often are two different breeds of people.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
There is a few unicorns that sit in the middle that can, yeah, that can do both really well, but generally you're either direct or you can hit the phones.
Yeah, I think back to a sales management role that I was doing, gosh, in the 1990s, and we had a guy with us who he was on our team, when he was the meet and greeter when clients either went on inspection visits or went came into the office. You know, he'd schmooze them before we met them, or the MD sometimes met them. And he was brilliant, you know. He used to come back from these inspection visits, had all had a drink. He was fantastic, really, really good. And they were all best pals exchanging personal phone numbers. Put this guy on the phone, and he was shy, reticent to speak, and even with friends as well. He'd be, okay, I'll see you later. He just didn't like using the phone.
And do you know what? I've seen it loads and loads of times. And do you know what I found through studying it? And this is not a science, it's just my own kind of correlation to this. I found the biggest reason why people who are good at direct sales struggle with cold calling is because when they pick that phone up, they become somebody else. Their voice changes, the body language changes, the entire physiology changes. Because they feel that they have to speak a different way or do something slightly different rather than just being themselves. And it becomes very obvious why they struggle with the phone when they're trying to be something that they're not.
Two schools of thought on that, as with most things, you know, because I do, whilst I agree people should be fundamentally their authentic selves, yeah? There is a degree that when you get on that phone or when anybody turns up to work, not just in sales, they're not the same person as they are at home. They're playing a part, like an actor. Yeah, you're playing a part. But that's interesting what you say about physiology, because something that I learned off Tony Robbins, and I'm sure you know this, if you want to change your mental state, your emotional state, the quickest way to do that is to change your physiology, is to, you know, get up, get off your ass, move, jump up and down, give somebody a hug, you know, whatever, high five somebody, all that sort of stuff. And immediately you feel better. You just do. It just sets off that dopamine and serotonin.
Yep, agreed, totally. And I think that the thing is, what we're talking about here as well, is about being able to mirror, whether it's tonality, whether it's the kind of language in terms of how they use words. I mean, one of the biggest things I see where a lot of salespeople struggle is they break the flow of conversation by chucking in words that don't belong there. So I'm speaking to you, Steve, and you're saying, oh, John, this is beautiful. I really admire this. And I turn around and break that flow by saying, yeah, isn't it excellent, Steve? Isn't this magnificent? Yeah. And the flow of conversation has just been broke because we're on different patterns.
Yeah, so that's like a bit of an NLP thing, isn't it? You know, matching people's language. But I actually, before I really sort of studied NLP in any depth a long time ago, I just said to people, use complementary language. It's the same thing, you know. It's the same, you know. When you get on the telephone, when you call someone up and say, "Hi, it's Steve from XYZ Company." Pleasantly, but not over the top enthusiastic, but not miserable, you're gonna behave accordingly with how that other person's energy and tonality is on the other end of the phone. You with me?
Totally.
If you can tell that somebody's like, oh yeah, good morning, so what can I do for you, Steve, today? How much money do you want?
They sound chirpy, they sound interesting.
Yeah, you get somebody like that who says, oh, what are you calling me about? How much of my money do you want today? You know, bang, you're off. You know that you can have some good repartee with this. But if you go, if you get somebody who makes hello sound like a threat, then, you know, you're not...
You're on your back foot, aren't you?
John, have I got a deal for you today? You're not going to be like that because it's going to be totally...
It's not in alignment. Yeah, there's no vibrational harmony.
That person operates on a different frequency. Yeah. So what you have to do, I suppose maybe a word to use as opposed to being an actor is that you have to be like a chameleon. Mm. Yeah? Makes sense? Mm, you just definitely. Have to... adapt to the person you talk, because people do buy from people who they feel they're not consciously thinking, oh, John's just like me, Steve's just like me, so I'll buy off him. They're not thinking that consciously, but subconsciously they are comfortable talking to you 100%. If they feel that you're a similar animal.
Totally. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? We like, as human beings, we like people who's like ourselves or who are like what we aspire to be like.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because sort of the old model of selling, the old school of selling, you know, said when you get into a prospect place of work, into an office, look round for, you know, pictures of him playing golf. Look round for pictures of his beautiful garden with the manicured garden with the grandkids in or something. And you know, whether it's true or not, you say, oh, I love playing golf.
Build rapport.
Your garden's just like mine. And then obviously he's going to buy off you because he really, that's bullshit, you know. That it's to a very small degree, but it's got, the thing is, it's got to be real. It's got to be real. You can't lie about it. You can't make it up. And the other thing is, as you quite rightly said, perhaps people also like to buy, not only from people who they think, oh, John's just like me, but what about if John's up there and a really inspiring guy and drives a fantastic car and that? Well, actually, you know that we are the product of our peers, who we hang around with, who we do business with. So actually, I'd quite aspire to be, you know, like you. Not a carbon copy of you, but similar. Yeah, I'd like that success. I'd like to carry myself that way. So it can be an aspirational thing, like you say.
Yeah. I think what's so fascinating, and this is why I love, like, personal development and why I love language and communicating and sales so much, is it's just so fascinating when you start peeling away the different layers of how we communicate and effectively communicate. There's a guy called Chris Voss. I think it's Chris Voss. And he was the ex-FBI negotiator. And he's got a training course out on Masterclass at the minute. And one of the stuff that he talks about is negotiating. And he says that a technique that works really, really well is if you repeat the last few words of what they've said to you with an up tone and then be quiet, they'll tell you everything else that they need, that's missing. So, for example, in a sales situation, if they turn around and say, listen, Steve, do you know, I like what you're saying to me, but I think it's just a little bit too expensive. By you returning that comment to them saying, you think it's a bit too expensive, in that upbeat tone, and then say nothing else and be quiet, they'll continue to tell you the reasons why they think it's expensive.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I've always thought that that's a form of paraphrasing, you know, and a paraphrasing. So most of us go through life, our prospects included, with people don't pay attention to them. People don't listen to you. So what does that do? And again, this is not something that we're consciously aware of, but it lowers that person's self-esteem. For example, for anybody watching, and for you, John, if we were having a conversation and you were telling me something that you considered important, or even telling me a joke or whatever, and I'm sat there on my phone, just hang on, John, a second. Could you get me a cup of tea, love? Well, I'm not paying attention to you. How do you feel?
Yeah, you feel terrible, don't you? You feel unimportant.
Like stink. Yeah. So And people go through this every day. Now, again, they're not consciously thinking, oh, by John not paying attention to me, my self-esteem's going down. But it is internally. Yeah. It's an emotional, it's an emotional thing, yeah? So if you take the opposite of that, if you're talking to some, particularly on the telephone as well, if you then say, well, let me just get this right, John, what you've just said, and paraphrase your answer back to me, what that shows, it shows I've listened to you intently, it shows I've heard you. And then if I say to you, if I've got that right, but could you just expand on that a little? How do you mean exactly? Then we go into an area that we call penetrative questioning, which means going deeper and getting that person, can even take that person down back the, down the timeline to events in the past. And then time really will fly, because mentally you kind of put them in a bit of a trance. It's called time distortion. And it's a really good technique to keep people talking. And the longer you keep somebody talking, stats tell us that the higher the probabilities of them wanting to talk to you again and probably even buying from you will be. Make sense?
It's good, isn't it? Powerful stuff. So, I mean, let's talk about this a little bit then, Stephen. So we're going very much into like the mindset, the development side, in that sense now. So, I mean, you've spent two decades in this space, haven't you? Learning it, you've spent time with Bob Proctor. I mean, let's talk about Bob Proctor for a minute.
I've spent three decades in this space. I had another mentor before Bob Proctor, but I met... It's funny how things happen, John, because I can't even remember how I got introduced to this lady, but she was in a network marketing company called Nikken. She was a distributor. They did like magnetic products for health and well-being, yeah? And she tried to recruit me. Now, I didn't join that, but one of the things that she did for me, which changed my life, and if I think of all the people that sprung into who I know now and stuff that I've done, it's incredible. She gave me a tape that had been copied more times than a bad blue movie. it was a cassette tape. And it was Bob Proctor giving a keynote talk for Nikken, and just something about his voice, the stuff he was saying, it was different and it resonated with me. And I listened to this for months and months, maybe a couple of years. I would always put this cassette on in the car or on my Walkman and listen to it. And I actually, it's so funny, because I, you know, you build up a mental picture of what somebody looks like. I didn't know what he looked like. And I thought that, I was thinking about actor Dennis Hopper. You know, the guy who was the nutcase in Speed?
I do, yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I was thinking of Dennis Hopper, and he was in that classic old film Easy Rider, actually. So I built this picture up just because of his voice. And when I saw how he looked, obviously the contrast was very stark, very, very, very different. And so in around about year 2000, I was flicking through the Sunday Times business to business section. And there was just a lineage ad in there, and it said, Bob Proctor, Science of Getting Rich, become a facilitator, work with Bob Proctor, dial this number. So to most people, that name wouldn't really have meant anything, but to me, it could have been the whole page. It leapt off the page at me, and I became a facilitator. I went to Southampton, he came over from Toronto, with a group of about 30 of us, and we became some of those people I'm still friends with today, funnily enough, you know? And he trained us in his sort of methodology, the psychology that he uses, you know, the stick man model, the subconscious mind, using your higher faculties to become facilitators and sell his program, Science of Getting Rich, which was a book that he'd rehashed from a guy called Wallace D. Wattles.
Brilliant.
I think predates Think and Grow Rich. And then I met him several times during that period when we were sort of working with him, working for him. He came over a few times, went to loads of his seminars, on Science of Getting Rich, the Goal Achiever Seminar, Mission in Commission, all the old classic ones that he'd been doing with Bob Proctor seminars. And then when I had my own property business in for about 5 years, sort of from 2004 to about 2007, 2008, we had all our salespeople listening to Proctor. We'd quote them, we'd do a sales meeting and say, right, what we're going to do now is I'm going to shut up, I'm going to play you this for 15 minutes and put a video on of Bob. And we had about 150 some salespeople. And then I got a call from someone saying, Bob's in town, do you want to meet up, have a coffee? And we said, do you want to come and talk to our salespeople? And the interesting, he said, sure, yeah, I will do. It's 25 grand for the afternoon. So, okay, there's the check, you know. And so the funny thing, you know, some people say, why would you pay somebody £25,000 to come and speak to your people for 2 or 3 hours? And then you have to buy him a burger afterwards, you know? So I said, well, that's really easy to answer, yeah? Because these people were so excited, so fired up, so motivated for this, that the next week they were buzzing for weeks off of this. We wrote about an extra 2 million quid's worth of business on the back of that, because they were just relentless. They were fired up beyond anywhere that we could take them at the time, you know? And so 25 grand, 2 million quid, tell you what.
Chicken feed.
You'd do it every day, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course you can, absolutely.
100%. Yeah, so I've just actually been on this weekend, he did a... he's been doing virtual seminars with Sandy Gallagher, with his son Brian and Peggy McCall, and you can see he develops people. He's even using his team, the people who do the audio visual, the computers, the people who do a lot of stuff in the background. He's bringing those people into the foreground to tell their stories and share their, you know, their experience as well. So we develop people as well, which is good. Which is just actually going back to, you know, we were talking about developing people. I didn't quite finish on that. I was going to say, if there is a spark of desire or talent, I think we should develop that. But I also think we should recognize if somebody is clearly not cut out to be in the sales game, we should tell them, you know, say, look, this isn't going to work for you. It's not going to work for us. The desk costs it. It's the best and kindest way to, if you like, fire somebody who's clearly in the wrong job at the time. Yeah. They're not going to be happy. They're not going to be productive. They're not going to make themselves money or make you money. So what's the point in them being there? Yeah. It's the easiest thing in the world to do, to say to somebody in a certain way, not in a nasty, condescending way, look, I don't think this is going to work out. Yeah, I can see you're not comfortable here. Move on. I'll give you a great character reference. And that's it. Man. Nature abhors a vacuum. That's a saying that I learned from Proctor. And what that means is that if you create space, something will naturally fill it. Yeah. The universe, nature, God, whatever, it'll work and it will put something into that space. Yeah. But you've got to free up the space first.
You've got to make space, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just reminded me of one of the training sessions that I did. I'd gone to a company. They'd got, at the time, I think they'd got about 18 staff on the phones. And so I went in, I sat down with them all individually. I did some kind of kickoff session with them as well.
Yeah.
And then I went back to the MD and I says, right, do you know, half of that team's no good. Like they'll not stick it out. They're here to collect a paycheck, the basic. They don't like the idea of working from a script. Do you know, like you need to put some boundaries in place because they're running up and down like they own the place. Do you know, they're going outside for fag breaks whenever they want. There's no structure.
Yeah.
I says, this is what you've got to do. Give them a structure, give them a script, give them this. He phoned me up like the week after and he said, John, 8 of them's just resigned. And I'm like, yeah, I told you that'd happen. You know, but now to back what you're saying, then what you've now got is you've now got 8 spaces to find the right person and that space will be occupied very quickly.
Yeah. I've got a similar story. I did some work for a telco a couple of years ago, So they were based in Manchester, you know, type of company that sells leased lines, broadband, and VoIP systems, yeah, and the VoIP hardware, yeah? And they had an office in the Northeast. Sales manager was an absolute diamond, but he was too nice, yeah? So I started doing these sessions with them via Zoom, and there was about 10 salespeople. And after I'd done the first couple, I spoke to the owner of the company, and he said, I've got a good sort of feedback from the sales manager about these sessions. What do you think of everybody? I said, do you want the honest answer, or do you want me to tell you what you might want to hear, or what might get me, you know, more doing more work for you over the coming weeks? He said, no, I want the truth. I said, if I were you, I'd close that office down. I'd just shut it. I said, because those people, there's one person other than the sales manager who wants to be there, and I'm sure they could relocate to Manchester. Because he told me that office was costing him 15 grand a month to keep right. it open.
Yeah.
And there were two people who were literally, when I was doing the training, these people were levitating, you know. It's just like, oh, it's power nap time, is it? It's training time, you know. It's an excuse to do sweet FA. And that was just the worst. But the attitude sucked, yeah, you know. It was a dreadful attitude. And like you say, they were just turning up for the basic. Yeah. They weren't there to make any money. They weren't there to make the business any money.
No.
And they'd be there, you know, a few minutes late every day. But by my goodness, do they know what time finishing time is?
Of course.
Just before, you know.
Do you know, out of the door. Do you know, yeah, one of the things that I always got drilled into me, and this was before I even got into business, this was from like jobs, is I always got drilled into me, if you get to work on time, you're late. You know, like if you get to work on time, you're late. You've got to be there early because you've got to get prepared. If you want to have how many people turn up at 9, get there for 1 minute to 9, and then they go and put the coat away, then they go to the toilet, and then they go and make a coffee. And before they sat at the desk, it's 15:15 or 20:20. They'll have a chat at a chin wag at the water cooler, and it's like, dude, you're late. Like,
if you can get hold of these, they're worth getting hold of. There's a program called Selling to Win, which is by my. I used to have an old mentor, which was somebody. I went out there to get to know this guy after reading his books and listening to his programs. Richard Denny, there you've got the book.
There's the book.
Well, Richard was a good friend of mine, and I had him. I used to pay him to be a mentor to me. I used to meet him up regularly. But if you listen to the Selling to Win program, where he's speaking to a live audience, he makes a quip exactly what you're saying there, where he says, you know, salespeople, you might get to work at 9, you might finish at 5, but you know, that's not necessarily the hours we work, is it?
No,
you know,
exactly.
And he goes on to say that they did a study and they found out that the actual selling time, face time or phone time, was less than 2 hours a day. so what are you doing the rest of the day?
Yeah.
But he was a great, I introduced him to Bob Proctor, actually, Richard Denny. Bob was doing a talk in, was it the Dorchester or somewhere? It was a big hotel. No, Cafe Royale. And on a Saturday afternoon, and I sort of dragged Richard up from Wiltshire, where he lived. I said, just come and meet this guy. So they met and had a chat, and Richard said, this guy, very, very advanced stuff, very serious stuff,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But he was somebody, Richard passed away a few years ago after, I think he beat cancer 2 or 3 times, and then he was in his middle 70s. He sadly didn't beat it on the last time, but he was a great inspiration with me. And I couldn't put my finger on it other than to say he just had the best attitude in the world. I used to go and meet this chap. I'd meet him at a hotel on the motorway. I'd meet him at the Institute of Directors in Pall Mall or anywhere. I'd spend a couple of hours with him. And he just used to sit there, and we'd get the coffee and biscuits on, and he'd go, right then, my son, tell me what's going on. And he just had this way with him. When I walked out of there, I felt like I could walk through a brick wall. I was so fired up, so positive. I believed that I could do anything. I couldn't tell you what he said to me. He had an infectious enthusiasm, and he was so experiential as well. So no matter what the problem was, whether it was personal, business, a mixture of the two, anything, he'd been there, done it. He'd had it.
Amazing. I mean,
he was an amazing guy.
Let's stay on this topic right now then, Steve. Like, attitude, firstly. How important do you believe attitude is to sales? I know the answer. Everyone knows the answer. But let's see what your side is.
Well, it's all important. For me, it sits right at the top. If we were to make like a pyramid of fit, this sits right at the top, right at the apex. Mm. And it fits nicely because it's an A as well. So it's got that shape. But it's everything, you know, and that's the whole thing. We're saying if somebody's got a spark of talent and a spark of desire, that demonstrates an attitude, yeah? You can have the most talented person in the world, but you can have a crap attitude, yeah? So there's no place for them on a team, you know? Definitely. Attitude, yeah, totally everything. In fact, there's a thing that I teach, which I learned off Richard Denny, and if you imagine two circles, they cross over in the middle, yeah? We've all seen that model for different things. And it's a person A, person B, exactly the same age, from the same sort of background. Let's say they lived on, back streets, backing onto each other. So demographically, socially, everything, they're the same. They've got the same IQ level, everything. They could be identical twins, but they're not. And they're starting a job on the 1st of January, and they receive the same product training, all the product knowledge, they receive all the company training, and they receive the same sort of sales training and mentoring, yeah? And so after 3 months or 6 months, whatever it may be, being that they're exactly carbon copies of one another almost, and they've had exactly the same training, you would naturally assume that they'll be doing pretty much exactly the same as each other, yeah? Mm-hmm. But we all know that that's bullshit, that they won't be. One person will be flagging, another will be flying, yeah? And the letter that goes in the middle of the circles is A for attitude.
Yeah.
I learned that off Richard.
That's great.
25 years ago, 30 years ago, and it's just one of those things that stuck with me. Because it's so true.
Yeah. Do you know the one that I always remember, and I'm going to paraphrase this slightly, but the main message I remember clearly. So the idea is that if you took the alphabet, A being representing the number one, B the letter two, number two, sorry.
Yeah, alphanumerically, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And if you take the word knowledge and the numbers and add them all up, it comes to something like 97 when you add it up.
Yeah.
If you take the word hard work and do the same, it comes to something like 96. You take the word attitude and add it up, it comes to 100.
It does.
And the real value there is that hard work and knowledge and all that kind of stuff will get you so far. The attitude is going to be the thing that takes you all the way.
It's the key ingredient. And it's funny you mention that, because I can do this in an hour very quickly, or I can take all day as a workshop on attitude. And what we do is we don't tell people that's the end game, the outcome, what you've just said, but we say, what I want to do after I've got to know everybody and got everybody relaxed, and I make my trainings, as I'm sure you do, I make them very interactive because it keeps people involved. It stops them from falling to sleep, let's be honest. And I said, right, first word then that we're going to talk about is aspirations. Would anybody like to tell me what aspiration is? Yeah. So, and an aspiration is really a goal. Yeah. So we can talk for an hour about goal setting and why it's important and why it will get you what you want in life and why it will put you on the frequency to attract that which you desire, etc., etc. And then the next word might be, for example, tenacity, persistence, sticking. So we go around the room and talk. So we use a number. I'm not going to go over all the words now, but we use a number of words. And then we do a recap on those words on a fresh flip chart. So it Can you tell me what was the first word we used, John? Aspiration. Capital A, the rest of the word. I always misspell it because I'm crap at spelling. But then when we get it, we can see you've got the word attitude. We end with enthusiasm. That's the E. You know what that word means? Enthusiasm comes from a Greek word, entheos. Yeah? And entheos literally means from within, spirit or God within. Yeah? Mm. So that's an interesting thing about that. And enthusiasm's a great thing in selling if it's genuine and if it's not over the top, you know, insincere. But the last four letters, yeah, ISAM, or however it goes, told you I was bad at spelling, but you can make an acronym of those. Because if you're genuinely enthusiastic, you know, if I sell these and these are the best sports water bottles in the world, I absolutely love it. I give them to all my family and recommend them to anybody, and I'm really into it. My enthusiasm says, I am sold myself. Mm. That's the last four letters of the word enthusiasm. Make that acronym. Yeah. And I think that sums it up pretty well. And then at the end of it, we do what you've just verbally demonstrated there yourself, you know, where we do. So A is number one, T is 21. And we get that. And the whole sort of premise is if you focus on these things, initiative is one of them. Yeah, hardly anybody has any initiative nowadays.
That's true.
Don't you find that, and I know you're a few years, you're 15 years younger than me, but even in your short 40 years, don't you find that, say, since you were 10, 11, 12, 15, since you were aware, people have got thicker, they've been dumbed down, you know, to the extent people can't think for themselves. If it's in the rule book, that's it. There's no latitude, yeah? There's no creativity or initiative. You know, you go in a pub, and order a pint of Heineken, the kid in the pub, he probably sells thousands of those every single week, yeah? Especially over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You'll be pulling those pints of Heineken. You reach in your pocket, like us guys do, you've got a bag full of shrapnel in your pocket. You say, how much is that, mate? I want to get rid of this shrapnel, this change. And that, he don't know. Yeah, he's going to sell 10,000 of them over the weekend, and he don't know how much they cost.
Yeah, just repetitiveness.
It's just one example, you know. No initiative, zero initiative. Let me ask you a question.
No, go on, shoot.
I just wanted to like air this because I talked about, I did a podcast with somebody else the other day and we talked about this, and I'd love to hear your view on it as somebody who's a bit younger. So let's just say that you are in a shop, and let's just say that that shop is a very well-known independent mobile phone shop, yeah? Because this is where I've seen this happen. I've seen it happen in other shops as well. This is the one that springs to mind. So they serve it, there's one member of staff in there, or two members of staff, and they're serving two people. You could be one of those people, or you could be in the queue. And then where the accessories are behind them, they've got a counter and it's got this strange thing on it called a telephone, yeah? And it rings, 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 and they don't answer it. Now, why is that?
Not their job.
Well, it is their job to answer it. I believe, and I think this is absolutely stupid, I believe that they've been in these days of not offending anybody, being all politically correct, being all softly, woolly, cuddly. I believe they've been told, because they do train them in these places, yeah? Whether they train them in the right way or the wrong way is a matter of debate. I believe they've been told, if you're with a customer and you're serving that customer at the counter, if the phone rings, ignore it.
I think you're probably right.
It'd be so rude and offensive, and the person will be just like mortified if you said, can you just give us a second, John? Yeah? Yeah. I'll ring you back in 2 minutes. What's your number? Sorry about that. Where were we? Because that could be somebody wanting to buy 10 mobile phones for the company. It could be somebody wanting to buy 1,000.
Steve.
It could be a wrong number as well.
But listen, until you answer it, you don't know. 100%, 100. If we could go higher than 100%, we'd go higher than 100% because I think you're absolutely 100% on the mark with that. And it's something that's been a bugbear to me for many, 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 many years. I got taught very, very early that if you're with a customer, no matter where you are, even if you're in the house, even if they're sat at your desk in front of you and your phone's ringing, I always got taught to a lot of people said this was the wrong way to get taught, but I still believe it's the right way. I was always taught if that phone rings, and excuse yourself, answer it, but get off it quick. And if you do it in front of them, they'll respect you more for that because they want to, like, they'll think subconsciously, if that was the other way around, would you be doing the same for me?
Yeah, yeah, quite agree. It's absolute bullshit, isn't it? Why would you do that? Yeah. And you could only imagine, you could only put your thumb in the air like that and think, how much, if you take all the branches of some of these are national companies, take all the branches together over one day, one week, one month, a year, 2 years, 3 years, how much potential business they've lost.
Yeah.
Because somebody else has thought, bollocks, I'm going to ring somebody, I'm going to ring Vodafone.
Go elsewhere.
It's incredible. Yeah. I think they must train them to do this because it's systemic. You see it throughout.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right, actually. I think because I've heard the message many, many times and I've had many people disagree saying, John, that's not the right thing to do. And I'm like, I don't care whether you think that's the right thing to do. It's what I think is the right thing to do. Now, just because I think it's 100% right, don't mean it's 100% right either. But that's just my belief, you know? And I think that's what, we're not here to cause conflict, but I'm just telling you that, like, you've asked me for my opinion. I'm telling you my opinion. Whether it's right to you or not is irrelevant. It's 100% right to me.
But what is 100% right as well is that by changing that practice, you will do more business.
Yes. Yes.
Your till will go ka-ching more times than it currently is.
And to quote Bob Proctor, I challenge you to prove me wrong.
Absolutely. It's a real bugbear of mine, that, because not that I care particularly how much business they're getting or not getting. It's just anal.
Yeah.
It's anal, you know? Yeah.
It's like I tried to get through to Tui. So we used to use Tui for all our holidays, and we used to go into the store and we used to book all, before we've got a travel counsellor now that looks after it, she's incredible. But we used to go into the store and we used to sit down with them and we used to get them to book all the holidays for us. And I tried to get in touch with TUI, their marketing department, and said, listen, I can save you probably in the region of 50 grand a month. Certainly more than 10. But I couldn't get hold of anybody. And maybe I didn't try hard enough because it wasn't something that I were really massively passionate about. But I just saw an opportunity where I could really help them. And I'll tell you what happened. Let's say, so you sit down with a representative and you say, right, okay, I want to go to Cape Verde.
Yeah.
What they do is rather than going onto their own intranet and their own system, what they do is they jump onto Google, they type TUI Cape Verde, and then they click the first one that comes up on their search results, which is a paid advertisement by TUI. So they're actually clicking on their own paid adverts. And it's like, come on, like, you do that how many times a day from how many different branches? Because they've all been doing it. So there's thousands upon thousands of pounds of revenue that you're paying out because your staff's too lazy to use your own system because they've probably not been trained.
Yeah, absolute muppetism, that, isn't it? There's a new word, muppetism.
Muppetism. Oh, man.
Muppetism.
So, Steve, to bring this in for a landing, because this has been an incredible episode, and I think we could quite easily rabbit it on for hours and hours and hours.
All day.
But like this kind of stuff that you're doing then. So the techniques, the mindset, the attitude, the training, the skills. Like you're saying that, like, the results that the firms that you've worked with, they've seen results up to almost 80% increases in the results that they get.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the secret sauce there? What, like, for anyone that's watching this or listening to this, What's a few tips that they could take away that they could look to maybe implement themselves that's going to allow them to...
Well, the secret, part of the secret sauce is I'm good at it. Yeah, I'm really good at it. But so I'll give you a prime example of that. Yeah, and this is where there is no secret. This is the big reveal. And often the big reveal in any sector is the secret is there is no secret. Yeah. So I worked with a division of, again, funnily enough, this was selling a B2B telco product for Siemens, yeah? Big electrical conglomerate, German company. So I worked with one of their UK arms, with one of the telesales teams, and I'd go in every week on a Monday morning and sort of G these people up. It was very, very interactive. And at the end of 3 months, when we did this for, so it was what, 12 sessions, they came to me and said, right, because I'd asked them for a lot of money. They said, no, we'll give you this much money, but we'll put these ratchets, we'll put kickers in place for levels of improvement. And I shot myself in the foot when we just sat down and worked this out for what the bonus would be if we hit 50%, a maximum of 50%. So we went like 10, 25, 35, 50%. They sat down, ultra transparent with me, got the spreadsheet out and said, results have gone up 74%. But here's your check based on 50%. Because we, so that was good. But... I've talked about this to people a lot of times, and they said, well, what did you do? What was the, you know, to use your phrase, the secret sauce? And I said, actually, it was really all about attitude. It was all about that, really. It was getting these kids to believe in themselves. It was raising their self-esteem. Yes, we talked about tonality, voice intonation, all the stuff that we would talk about that you can imagine and everyone can from a sales training point of view. But we went deeper than that. We went into who are you really? You're not just your name, yeah? I mean, I learned this again from Proctor. We are spiritual beings living in a physical body. So, and we're having an experience here on earth. So I go into all this stuff with people and you might say, what's that got to do with selling a telephony solution?
Everything.
It's got everything to do with it. Yeah, it's got everything. That's the answer. Because it's expanding these people's consciousness, these people's awareness, and it's their elevating their confidence, and it's changing who they are. It's like I said to these guys I've been working with in Asia recently, it's bringing the best out of them. That's what it is.
Yeah. Brilliant. I love it. And so, like, in terms of the kind of companies, the Siemens and the telcos and all the bigger companies that you're working with, like, what's your route into them? Are you cold calling them? Are you getting referrals into them? Are you, like, direct marketing them? Like what's your route to that?
I get people contact me from time to time off LinkedIn. I've had a number of referrals. Again, you know, that's an amazing thing. Just quickly, the number of companies that
we don't ask for referrals. I know what you're going to say.
They don't train salespeople to ask for referrals. You know, they don't train their customer service people to ask. And incidentally, I do feel that customer service is the next subsection of sales as well. Because if you don't look after them, they're not going to come back and rebuy. We're not going to recommend or refer, whether you ask them for it or not, you know? So it's just another part of the sales process as far as I'm concerned. I do some marketing sometimes. I've got a website, which is steveq.org. And then people can call me up. We sometimes reach out to companies, like you said, you've done. Sometimes they want to listen, sometimes they don't. The interesting thing about selling sales training per se, I wouldn't just say I'm a sales trainer because there's so much more to it than that with the whole mindset and attitude and spirituality thing. But it's one of those things, it's kind of an oxymoron because if you go to a company and they're smashing it, they're 50, 100% over target, why do we need sales training? Well, we can make you better. You're smashing it 200% target. Let's take it to 300%, 400%. Yeah. And then you've got the other side of the spectrum where they say, Oh, we've got no budget for that. We're not doing very well today at the moment, John. Oh, the figures are down. Well, why do you think the figures so? Yeah. Either way, it's a rhetorical question, isn't it?
It is. Do you know what I've always found is really good responses in two ways there? Is like the last one that you just said there, if they don't know budget, it's like, well, I understand what you're saying. Do you anticipate that you're still going to be in business next year? Because if you think that you're not, then you might as well do it anyway, because that debt's going to get written off.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, you might as well just do it anyway.
Yeah.
But the first one's always interesting, is that, do you know what? Yeah, we're performing, we're doing incredible, we don't need no training. It's like, yeah, okay, cool. Listen, I don't want to take the ones that's not performing. Anyone can take the ones that's not performing and make a few changes. I want your top. Give me your top ones and let's see what we can do with them. You know, they're the ones that we're going to make a difference with.
Yeah, for sure. Bang on, John. Bang on.
Steve, is there...
You're on the same page, mate.
Always. Mate, listen, I think we are literally cut from the same cloth but by what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Steve, is there anything that we've not discussed that you think would bring amazing value to anyone that's watching or listening to this right now? Any questions that I've not asked you or anything that you've not talked about?
Well, you know what? Yeah, loads, but it's a time thing, isn't it? But and this will resonate with some people, it won't resonate. I decided a couple of days ago, so I've written a few books, yeah? And I decided to write another book a couple of days ago. And very quickly, I came up with it took me about 2 minutes to come up with the content for this book. You know when it just flows? Bang, 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 bang. Yeah. In a super creative state. And I'm going to call this book The Spiritual Seller. Mm. Yeah? Nice. It's not a book about religion or spirituality particularly. It's using a lot of the stuff that I've learned from people like Bob Proctor about going inwards. Yeah? So we're talking about, I've got all the stuff here, using our intuition, using our integrity, using our frequency, vibration, perception, yeah? Transference of feelings. So using our higher faculties rather than just using our sensory faculties, you know, hear what we hear, smell, touch, because everybody uses those to decide what their world is like rather than using their higher faculties from within to create their world. And I thought of this, I'm sure there's loads of people have thought of this. You know that law, it's a universal law, and it's the law of cause and effect.
Love it.
Yeah? And we all know what it means. But if you just take the D off the word and, yeah? Cause and effect. You can cause an effect yourself, yeah? But you do it from inwards. Neville Goddard, who was a 20th century mystic, incredible. I recommend anybody who's interested in this sort of subject to get into him. A lot of his stuff I can see is coming out in Proctor's material. He said, your world is you pushed out. What do you think that means, you know? Mm. So it's about using God in your selling. And I don't mean God as a man with a beard, as the church, you know, teaches.
You mean all.
I mean, using everything, using all of you, using the spirit within, shifting your paradigm, just the whole thing, yeah? There's so much of it in there, but it's about, I think, sales is so much, and with the telephone as well, John, it's about transferring a feeling to somebody, and you do that using your emotion, yeah? So that's where I'm going with the next book, and I'm incorporating that more and more into training. And that really does bring the best out. I mean, let me ask you a question. What do you think's best, to go into that sort of thing and get people's awareness of themselves and who they really are and who their customers and prospects really are? Do you think it's best to teach people that, or say, you know, teach them like they used to in the 1970s, the old full Nelson close technique? Oh, well, if he says that, back him into a corner, bully him into, he won't be able to say no then, will he? It's bullshit. So that's really where I'm coming from, that belief, the whole emotion, feeling, the whole ball of wax, John, with that.
Sounds good, mate. It sounds really good. Like,
Yeah, and you can tell I'm quite enthusiastic about it as well.
Just a tad. Just a tad enthusiastic about it, yeah. No, Steve.
You know why? Because it's the truth, and that's all anybody wants from you, from me, and from themselves, which is the hardest person sometimes to get the truth from, is yourself. Yeah. But that's all anybody ever wants. Yeah. Somebody once said the truth will set you free, and it's true. It does. It sets people free.
The thing is, though, not everybody wants the truth, do they? They want their version of the truth. They don't want the ugly truth.
Sometimes difficult to face up to reality. You know, I coach people as well. So I take, and I know you do, and we've all got our own different methods of coaching people. But honesty and truth, actually, because you can't, to coach somebody and to get the best results out of them, whether he's a sales manager or a CEO, you've got to be able to get to a point where you've covered everything in the past and you can start again with a blank canvas, yeah? You know, and you've got to get, as Pete Sage said, he's got this thing, to me or through me, yeah? So somebody's either, everything happens to me, yeah? Rather than it's an experience going through me and I'm growing from it, yeah? So people and things are happening to me, they're in what's called victim mode. Or if you ever read, if you read this book from James Redfield called The Celestine Prophecy, he talks about everything's a drama. So it's a victim drama. Have you noticed there are some people you meet that every relationship they go into, there's drama with it. Yeah. Every business or job they go into, there's freaking drama with it. Yeah. And it's just a pattern.
Yeah. Yep.
And they don't know, but it's their paradigm, it's their experiences of the past, it could be things they've observed as kids or their parents have doing, it's made them like that, and they've literally been programmed by somebody else, by the news, by whatever, to behave this way. And so naturally, you know, they go and attract the same thing time and time and time again, until they create an awareness of this. And then they're in a position to make a choice. Do I want to do something about it? Do I want to break this pattern? Do I want to, you know, in NLP, they call it a pattern interrupt, yeah? Do I want to interrupt my own pattern and go and try and reprogram myself? And we show people how to do that as well. And I know you're big into all that sort of thing.
Majorly,
as well.
Steve. I mean, absolutely. I mean, like, one of the things that's, I'm just looking for it now, I can't find it, but I'm trying to find my phone. But, like, one of the things is that you look at your phone, how many times do you update your software on your phone? Once, sometimes twice a year. How many times do you update
the big ones, yeah.
Yeah. How many times do you update the apps? Like, you go to your app store on your phone, especially on the iPhone. I guarantee there's always an app that needs updating. Always.
Always, yeah.
How many times have you updated this app?
Yeah.
Never.
They don't. Yeah.
This app has been closed off at 7 years old. And we're now living a version of a seven-year-old belief system.
Yeah, you've got to upskill and upgrade and learn and grow all the time. And if you don't use it, you lose it. Yeah, that applies to so many things. In life. I always use the analogy, you know, and I hope this never happens to anybody who's watching, but imagine you've got a family member who needed life-saving heart surgery or brain surgery, yeah? And super, super serious. And you go for the consultation just before the operation and you meet the surgeon and he's the nicest guy that you can ever imagine. He's got that fantastic, what do we call it? Bedside manner. He's fantastic. He's just the most lovely. You'd like to go for Sunday lunch with him, you know? But he's in his middle 50s or early 60s. And during the course of the conversation, you found out that he's never upgraded his skills or techniques since he left medical school when he was 26 or 27 years old. And that, how would you feel about him operating on your nearest and dearest for a life-saving? You'd maybe be looking for another doctor, wouldn't you?
Yeah, true. Very true. Very, very true. And we go through life like that, don't we? Taking advice from people that's not qualified to give us advice. And I don't mean academically qualified, but I mean experience qualified.
Well, it's the blind leading the blind, isn't it? You know, and especially in the days, nowadays, since the advent of social media, all forms of social media are a platform for people to vent their opinions. I think it was Earl Nightingale, who was Proctor's mentor back in the day, said opinions are the cheapest commodities in the world, you know? And Steve Q says, on top of that, opinions are the cheapest commodities in the world. Everybody is brimming with them nowadays. They're full of opinions, and they're just dying to regurgitate them on any poor sod who will listen, you know? So we take these opinions in, but we never know. Are they factual? Are they real? What's behind those opinions? You know, oh, well, somebody else said that. And but who told them? Well, that was somebody else's opinion. And it snowballs, you know? Yeah. And it really is the blind leading the blind. Yeah. Over so many insignificant... I mean, it really pisses me off when you see, you know, a headline on the internet, on Google. Somebody said something slightly controversial. It goes, oh, Twitter explodes over this. So what? Who gives a shit? You know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. What the focus, we are, you know, one of the words that I use just before we wrap up, I do this thing called 5D, and it's five words with D. And one of the words beginning with D that I ask people about in coaching is distraction. Mm. Because everybody says, you know, these things, these phones, I'm the world's worst as well. I'm a gadgetholic. Tablets, I've got three phones, three computers, all of that. They're driving me mad. But they're supposed to make life easier. There's apps on here, there's stuff you can do on here, but even 10 years ago, you just said, wow, that belongs in Star Wars. That will never manifest in our world. Yeah. Yeah. And they're here to make our life easier. You can send a file like that to Australia in a heartbeat. So why is everybody, quote unquote, so busy nowadays? Oh, they're so terribly busy. Yeah, we've got to do a text to when I've got to text you to find out when it's okay to WhatsApp you, to find out when it's okay to message you on Twitter, to find out if it's okay to then send you an email to arrange an appointment. Fuck me, you know, pick up the phone.
Why not just pick it up?
They're not busy. They're not busy. They're distracted.
Yeah, I agree.
They're distracted.
That's what I agree.
Bullshit and other people's around.
And you're right, absolutely. And I think that the thing is that it's everyone's pointing the finger at social media and blaming social media, saying it's that it's social media. So I don't think social media is to blame at all. I think social media is not the problem. It's just exposed the problem. Like, we're the problem.
You've got a choice about how much time you spend on Facebook. You've got a choice how much time you spend on TikTok, LinkedIn, all these things. It's just as you've got a choice of how much YouTube you watch, how much whatever you watch.
Many calls you make today.
How many calls you make today. Right. Which brings us to a very, very poignant sort of conclusion, because I have got quite a few phone calls to make, and I've got a Zoom call to be on in another 20 minutes as well. Nice. So can I say to you, from like a big thank you from the heart, this has been amazing to talk to you, and I hope that whoever watches it enjoys it and gets some value and benefit
from it. I'm sure they will. Steve, before you go, where I know you mentioned your website earlier, but where else can people find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Steve Q. Yeah, that's just Steve and then a Q on the end. They can find me on my email address is steve@steveq.org. Very simple. Steveq.org is the website. And then, you know, if anybody can't find me on those, I guess they can always leave a message with you on this or comment. When I see the video from you as well, I'll be sharing it. So, fantastic. Give us a shout out, anybody who wants any help or coaching in the areas that John and I have been discussing. I'd be delighted to do a free discovery call with you.
Marvellous. Well, Steve, it's been absolutely wonderful. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your input. I'm sure everyone's going to love it. In fact, I know everyone's going to love it. Have an absolutely great day, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Super, John. Thanks a lot, mate. Bye-bye. All the best.